Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who before every single show always remembers to put on his big girl panties. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our amazing race wrap up here back in the studio. Jessica Leese, how are you?
I'm so glad your power's back on, Rob.
Yes. We are back up and running after last week's detour, and now we are ready to go. I already have screwed up because I wanted to introduce you as the blonde girl in the gondola.
That would be appropriate, I guess. But, you know, I was...
Not really, but...
If you were podcasting from your car again, I was ready to throw myself in the canal.
Yes. You know, it could be worse. If I lived in Venice, I might have to podcast from a boat, Jess. That's not ideal.
You know, I'm surprised nobody has pointed this out because we have the type of listeners who enjoy trying to find the pattern that's going to be the memory task that never materializes.
Yes.
But every single episode this season has featured a boat.
Ooh, I thought you were going to say that they would have to put together all the different places I've podcast this season.
That's going to be the memory task for the podcast.
Yeah, we'll have a quiz at the end of the season. So interesting. So you think that they could have like pictures of the boats and you have to match them up, that this is a very nautical season?
Let me be clear. I in no way think that is going to happen.
Okay.
But it is something that I just noticed this episode that... We're finally, like, we've had enough of these that, you know, they've had the ferry boat that went to Zanzibar. They had the kayaks in Norway. They've had gondolas, and they've had James Bond speedboats in Lake Como. So, yeah, who knows?
Okay. Well, Jess, we'll see. We have not gotten that in terms of any show feedback. And we get so much feedback on this show. Mostly positive, Jess.
Mostly positive.
Mostly.
And we treasure all of our feedback.
Yes. I mean, that's really the backbone of which podcasting is built, getting feedback from the listeners. So always most important to us. You can always email the show as well, amazingrace@robhetzelwebsite.com. All right, Jess. So here we are after episode 7, a non-elimination leg. Mike and Liz get saved by a non-elimination leg for the second time in 3 hours of the show. How are you feeling?
Well, you know, non-elimination legs, they're necessary. We are happy to have them when they save a team we like. They still always feel like a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah, and I feel like that this one was especially, I mean, I don't know if it was because it was Mike and Liz and they had already been saved by a non-elimination leg, but I was really, really?
It is disappointing, and especially... Like, I'm thinking of the seasons where teams get saved multiple times by non-elimination and then they end up winning the whole thing. Like, is it safe to say that Mike and Liz would now be kind of on par with the Beekmans if they went on to win it?
I mean, they've had high highs, and I don't remember if the Beekmans had a couple of first place finishes along the way. But
I guess they kind of didn't.
Yeah, they've had low lows, and I'm not talking about Logan and London.
No, you certainly are not.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different that this has been like a well-oiled machine at times, but then they've also gone off the rails. Although this time, it was odd for me to see Liz struggle so much. I feel like that the times in the past that they've really had problems has been because of their communication. This one was squarely on Liz.
Yeah, and we're getting to the point now where smaller and smaller errors will mean the end of the race for people. Like, you can run a pretty good leg and you can do everything mostly right, and then you can still like get one small thing wrong and it enables everybody else to pass you, especially I think in these latter day seasons where they're trying to keep things much tighter than they used to in the past, and there's really no margin for error at this point.
Yeah, and it was really surprising to see Liz struggle with this task, especially considering her background.
I paint at home all the time, and it was kind of funny because the mask that I chose was the exact same style of a cow skull that I painted before I left.
I mean, she had just done a cow skull.
I guess I know that painting animal bones is a thing.
Yeah.
I guess I know that, but...
But the shading is different.
The shading is very different. I guess they don't really blend it quite the same way.
No, I guess they don't. All right, Jess, just talk about this leg in general. We had the detour of Sing It versus Bring It. What did you think of those two tasks?
Well, I feel like they seemed pretty evenly matched, but I really... It felt to me like production was trying to steer everybody toward the Sing It rather than the Bring It. Like, Bring It was entertaining enough, but you could tell they wanted everybody in funny outfits on a boat singing a song badly.
Yeah, that's classic Amazing Race. In terms of the singing tasks that we've seen over the years, where did you rank this one in the pantheon?
This didn't seem that hard to me, I did note that they were judging it on different criteria. I feel like this was a much easier task than probably, specifically the one in Vienna with the boys choir.
Yeah.
That's a particular favorite of ours. I think this was a lot easier. You didn't seem to have to necessarily carry a tune quite as well, but they were tracking like your ability to sing together and to be on the beat. And I'm actually, on the other hand, I'm kind of surprised that a task that was so focused on staying on the beat, you had the drum major have to sing it more than once.
Yeah. And we saw as a couple of teams need to do it multiple times, but nobody really struggled with it. Nobody really got hung up on the detours.
Yeah. And the only reason I can kind of get a sense of what the criteria must have been on this task is that there was a lot more footage of this on the Amazing Race YouTube channel where you could kind of follow a whole repetition of the song and you could kind of hear a little bit more of why they might have had to do it again.
Yeah. And then, Jess, we have our roadblock, which was, I thought, Amazing Race really trying to drill down on the nightmare fuel this season. masked intentions. What was going on here, Jess?
Well, they've done tasks in Venice with masks before. I don't think it was nightmare fuel. I think it was like comically creepy.
Comically creepy. I mean, this is like on Game of Thrones and Bravos when Arya goes and watches like the crazy play. And at least that had like the plot of Game of Thrones. This was just so bizarre.
Well, they were pulling fake intestines out of the guy.
Yeah.
How is that not entertaining?
You could pull intestines out of a person, but they pulled intestines out of the guy, and then they pulled a chicken, and then they pulled, like, a tooth, like, with pliers out of the guy's stomach.
Well, maybe he had a big lunch, Rob.
Yeah, what is this performance art going on, Jess?
Oh, this is they describe it, it's Commedia dell'arte, it's a largely improvised theatrical format.
Yes.
It's something I don't mention this
Upright
very
Citizens
often on the
Brigade,
air.
This is not, okay?
It is a precursor to Upright Citizens Brigade, Rob. My day job is at a performing arts school, and our drama division actually did a Commedia dell'arte production, I think, as recently as last year. So it's a form it's not something you see a lot of in contemporary culture. But you see its roots in a lot of places. It's okay.
Okay.
I don't know if I go see it recreationally, but it's all right.
I don't know. It's a little creepy for me, Jess. But I scare easily.
It's broad, I think, is how we would characterize it. They it's supposed to be very funny and over the top, and you know, I can understand being scared about pulling a chicken out of someone's stomach cavity.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk through the events from tonight. We had the teams leaving Lake Como, had to travel by bus to Venice. And we saw at the start of the race, Becca and Floyd met up with Matt and Redmond, and they said that their goal was to beat Tara and Joey. I guess now that we don't have Ashton and Vank to kick around anymore, people have now shifted their sights. And you know what? Cannot blame Becca and Floyd and Matt and Redmond for targeting Joey and Tara, because to me, they seem like one of the top teams, I have to say. A really, really fantastic team.
As fantastic as they are, and I cannot quibble with that, Rob, I don't think I would characterize it as targeting
big
them
threat
so
to
much.
Win the game.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Undeniable.
All of my money is on them to win. I think they're fantastic racers. They're a huge threat. I don't think they're being targeted. I think they're just being singled out as the team to beat.
And that everybody is recognizing what a threat they are.
Everybody's recognizing what a threat they are. But at the same time, I think they're much beloved among their fellow racers.
Oh, it goes without saying.
Like, everybody gets along with them. Everybody loves them. At the same time, they're saying...
To know them is to love them.
I agreed. Just lovely people.
Yes. And so then all the teams eventually arrive. They are headed on the four-hour bus ride to Venice. We see a little bit of Scott and Brooke, that Scott is going to attempt to not do anything to trigger Brooke in this episode. What do you think of the new strategy?
I don't know how well that's going to work, because I think I would be equally angry if I were Brooke. I'd be equally angry if he just wasn't doing anything.
Yeah, he says no matter what he does, that is going to end up cultivating this negative, glasses half empty behavior.
I think choosing not to do something is the same as doing something.
Yeah, this is tough. This is tough because I've talked about this at times, that my wife does have a short fuse, Jess, and a low tolerance for almost anything I say or do. And so sometimes me going out of my way to not make her mad makes her more mad.
Well, Rob, do you remember the premiere episode of Survivor Nicaragua?
Yes.
Do you remember Wendy Jo saying she was worried if she talked too much, people would find her annoying and they would vote her out?
Mm-hmm.
So how did she try to remedy this situation, Rob?
What did she do? She didn't talk? Is that what you're saying?
She didn't talk to anybody at all, ever. People would ask her, how you doing, Wendy Jo? She'd just kind of like look at her feet. And what did that get her, Rob?
Yeah, ostracized.
Ostracized.
Nobody even asked her how old she was.
It's true.
Okay, so teams are off on the boat to Venice. Joey and Tara just go zipping by. They certainly, again, picked the best boat to get on.
They absolutely did. I want to point out a really cute moment here that, like, I feel like at this point there's not a team left that I don't like on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I liked all of these teams pretty much, but there's a point where Floyd and Becca are in one boat, and Matt and Redmond are in the other boat, and the boats are running in parallel, and they're both like pretending they're making the boat go faster. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like jokingly racing the boats, and like Matt stands up like he's riding a horse. And for some reason, this just slayed me. Like the second time I watched it, it struck me as pretty hilarious. And I almost, like, anything bad that I've said about Matt and Redmond, I've kind of now, no, I see
fun.
Their appeal.
They're
they
fun.
Are fun.
They're fine.
Like, they're not team fun, but they're fun.
Right. No, the only team that I think doesn't bring anything to the table is still Lolo, Jess.
They tried really hard to make Lolo bring something to the table this week.
I don't know. I don't think it's happening.
I think the fewer teams you have, the more everybody's got to carry some of the load. And, I mean, the show was trying to give them a storyline.
They're trying to make Lolo happen.
I'm not sure Lolo's happening.
Yeah. Okay. So Lolo in this episode, then out of nowhere, I guess this is their thing, where all of a sudden they're kind of like being, you know, really sketchy with everybody. And there were other teams they were working with, and now they're like pretending that they don't know who any of the other teams are.
Yeah, this is interesting to me. I don't think they did anything wrong.
Yeah. But it certainly pissed off Mike and Liz and also Brooke and Scott in this episode.
I think everybody's looking for someone to be pissed off at.
Yeah.
You know, Vank and Ashton, they don't have them to kick around anymore. So it's like, who are we going to look at for being shady next?
Lolo.
Lolo isn't doing anything else, so I guess they're the shady ones now.
Yeah, they are pretty shady. Okay, so the teams had to go to the different detour. We had a couple teams going off to Sing It. We were going to see Team Fun go off to Sing It. Matt and Redmond were going to bring it. Tara and Joey would also be bringing it. And so what did you think of the decision for Team Fun? Again, true Team Fun fashion, nobody having more fun singing it.
I think Team Fun has the right idea, and this goes back to something Linda Holmes used to always say in the early seasons of The Amazing Race. If you're faced with two detour options and you don't know which one to take, always go with the one that seems like it's going to be more fun.
Yeah. Okay, well, that is what Team Fun certainly did. Jess, we got to see a lot of suitcases falling down. Hopefully nobody had any valuables in their luggage.
I think those suitcases were full of rocks. Like, didn't they weigh like 50,000
pounds? 30,000 pounds is what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We got to check our numbers, but that's what I heard.
Jess, how impressed were you when Joey just went beast mode, carrying all the suitcases around Venice with reckless abandon?
It was pretty amazing. Like, especially, like, there's probably 15 tons of luggage on that cart, and he just, yeah. Like it was nothing.
Incredible. Yes. Okay. So we got to see different teams trying to do the singing task. Just, I really did like the couples that needed to be impressed. None of them seemed impressed. And eventually it just seemed like they were like, I want to be off this boat.
Well, you know, I would guess that most of these couples would probably have had the same reaction to an actual gondolier singing that actual song. Did you see how many verses? Did you see how many verses that song had and how many times everybody had to do it?
How many verses did it have?
Well, it looked like it was marked out that they only had to do three, but that thing had at least like 15 verses.
Yeah, well, they did it time and time again. Nobody really struggled with it. I mean, we were nowhere near like a Mark and Bopper type situation here with anybody getting stuck on the song.
Well, and this is kind of, I mean, I'm not going to get curmudgeonly on The Amazing Race because I'm just happy it's here. Mm-hmm. I'm happy it's still on. I'm trying to enjoy the ride for as long as it takes. But it is something that's happened, I think, especially in recent seasons, where in order to kind of save time and not have to have a crew at a task for hours and hours, it seems like the judging criteria has gotten a little bit more lax. Like, I think judges are also more likely to tell teams what they've done wrong so they can correct it, where I think in earlier seasons that didn't happen quite as much.
So you feel like that they can only shoot in a location for a certain number of hours and they just sort of at times will just want to wrap things up so they can move on with the day?
Yeah, or even not even that improvised. I think it's more calculated. I think it's like we're going to tell teams what they're doing wrong so that they'll get in and out faster so that we're not running the risk of having one team stuck there for 8 hours and utilizing like all the resources that would handle.
Yeah. Now, neither detour really slowed anybody down that much. It seemed like that the problem was people just finding the detours.
Well, that's Venice for you, Rob. I don't know if you've ever been to Venice.
I have not. I have never been to Europe.
Gosh, you got to go to Europe, Rob.
Okay. We'll do it. Know-it-alls in Rome. 2018.
I'm going to insist that if you do a live know-it-alls in Europe, I want an Amazing Race show there too.
Okay.
Okay. Because Amazing Race is definitely still going to be on at that point.
Yeah, Jess, they settled that writer's strike real quick.
Yeah, I might be the only person in the world that's like irritated that there was no writer's strike.
They could have struck for a little bit.
They could have.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have been to Venice and I was there by myself. And I think my conclusion was Venice is not a place you go by yourself because.
Why? Because it's a beautiful city.
It's a beautiful city. It makes you sad to be single. And you want to be the person like being sung to in the gondola
right.
with your loved one.
The Tinder scene in Venice is not happening.
It wasn't happening in 2000.
No, certainly not.
Much.
No.
But the other thing about it is you need to have someone with you because you are going to get lost and it's going to happen immediately. And I had a map. And it was not useful at all. I just kind of resigned myself to the fact, like, I'm not going to see all these marked sites unless I stumble upon them accidentally. I'm just going to wander around and enjoy the city for what it is and not really worry too much about finding things because that just ain't happening.
Did you get lost?
Pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
I got lost. And the only reason that I did anything that day was because I stumbled upon it by accident. Like,
okay, but there was enough to do everywhere you went that it didn't.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. And, you know, it's just like everywhere you can walk, you know, there are 4,000 bridges there and tiny little alleyways. Things are not well labeled and nothing is on a grid. It's challenging. It's one of the more challenging places you could go. So it's not surprising that many people had trouble finding their way around.
Yeah. Now, Jess, this is a little bit of a non sequitur, but I have an observation about The Amazing Race that I think that The Amazing Race in a lot of ways is like working in an office. You have all these other teams that you just like continuously like bump into at different points during the day. And you have to sort of like fake enthusiasm for seeing them every single time you run into them. And then at the point where you don't muster up the enthusiasm to greet the other teams, then it's the beginning of a rivalry.
Nothing that exciting has ever happened to me in my like 16 years of working in offices.
Yes. So you say hi to everybody every time you see them. It's not like a point where it's like you're just not doing it.
No, it's kind of the other extreme. We just don't say hi to anybody ever.
Okay. Okay. Well, then I guess throw my theory out, because I feel like that, you know, these teams, especially this season, it seems like every time they see one another, like, hey. And then you had on the other extreme, Lolo just pretending like they don't know anybody. And then that really pissed people off.
Yeah, it seems like this is a uncommonly close-knit cast on one end. And then there's a couple of outlier teams that kind of haven't heard from at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, they are, you know, they're frequently hanging out together. Like, a bunch of them went to Vegas together. There was a big thing in New York.
Whoa.
This past week. And even, like, even Vank is in on this, so.
Good.
You know, they're not too mad at him, which is great.
Yeah. Stop bullying Vank, everybody.
And, you know, they spend a lot of time together, but then there's certain racers that, I guess, maybe are just not social media savvy, or they just aren't in on it. But for the most part, I think it's just that, like, a lot of people clicked very quickly and formed some really good bonds. And some casts
click,
are like
click,
that. Some
click,
casts
click,
are.
Click. Sorry.
Thanks, Troyzan.
All right. Jess, so we start getting teams over to the roadblock, and teams start working on the masks. So I thought that this challenge was going to be like that the people were going to be like moving constantly, and that's how it was going to be really hard to copy the mask. But it was like once you picked your person, they just like stood still for you.
Well, they've had one like that, kind of. They've had one where you had to, like, select a mask that was already painted and then find the other person that had the mask exactly like the one you have. That's one variation on it. And this, I did like having the live model. That was a nice element, because there have been arts and crafts tasks where they just kind of give you the object and say, make another object like this object. And that's even less fun. So at least this was at least an attempt to take a task that probably isn't as dynamic to watch on television and make it a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like that about it.
Okay, so Redmond was the first to go through. He started going through his mask. He forgot to put the gloss on it, but he sort of gets through pretty uneventful.
Yeah, I mean, they just ran a really solid leg this episode, and there's not a lot you can say about it. I see what I did there.
Yes. I'm sorry. No, Redmond does it. That's fine. Jess, there were a couple of teams that were having some issues getting over to where the roadblock was. Brooke and Scott were getting into it once again, and they were sort of fighting over where the main waterway was, or what a main waterway was. There was a point where Brooke was threatening to jump in the water.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've heard a lot of comparisons between Brooke and a favorite former racer of ours. I've heard a lot of parallels between Brooke and Haley. And
yes.
So I thought it might be kind of fun to brainstorm about this, to sort of compare and contrast, because I was thinking about this a little bit. And one key difference I've noted is that when Haley flew off the handle, it was usually because she was right and nobody was listening to her. And in Brooke's case, a lot of the time, Brooke doesn't know what's going on, and she isn't sure if she's right or not, but she's pretty sure that Scott's not right either. So it's interesting to me that, you know, my mental image of Haley, and I looked back on season 26 to kind of get back into that headspace is like her key phrase was kind of, I'm always right and you never listen. And Brooke is kind of like, I don't know what's going on and you're not listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But her ranting is like kind of unproductive. Like, oh, I might as well just jump in the water then. That's it. You know, it's really just not helping. And I love Brooke.
I think Brooke is really entertaining. And I think Brooke is also getting, I mean, this is clearly the way she is and the way she reacts to things. But I also think she's getting a little bit played up in the edit because I think she is probably far more fun to hang out with in person than her.
Sure, but she's also not doing a super stressful Amazing Race at the time you're hanging out with her.
That is true. But notice the way that other people respond to her as well. Like we did see, you know, there was a little bit of a thing with Liz telling her to put her big girl panties on. Mm-hmm. But everybody else seems pretty happy to see her. They seem like she's, you know, she's in the A crowd.
Yeah, Liz didn't like that she's always asking for help.
Yeah, but I think this is a separate issue and we're going to have to get into this in a minute. Okay. But yeah, I mean, everybody seems to like Brooke. They seem to enjoy being around her. There hasn't been a lot of like people kind of elbowing Scott and being like,
Yeah. We see Tara. She is going to do the roadblock. Tara was getting a little frustrated there with doing the painting. And I thought it was sort of funny, just like her inner monologue, or I guess her outer monologue of what she was talking about, where she was like trying to do the painting. She's like, okay, I'm trying to do the painting and I could do it. But I guess if I didn't have to be in the army and be a mom and do all these other things, then maybe I could learn to paint. But like she's like really venting about having to do this and not knowing how to paint.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little more forgiving about people like tying everything back into being a parent now that I am one. You know, two seasons ago, we're having someone talk constantly about their kids and what it means to them to be a parent. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, shut up about your kids. Nobody cares. Get back to racing. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little more sympathetic nowadays.
And then Liz, again, I played the clip before about how she painted a cow skull. She came into this really confident.
She did. And her key, I think her key error, and it might have been the thing that cost them, you know, that pushed them into last place this leg, she just didn't follow the directions. She came in a little overconfident, assumed she knew what she was doing, and then didn't watch the demonstration and did the steps out of order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I felt like that London was really shading her, about her shading, about how, like, Liz is totally doing it wrong.
Yeah, and London, I mean, to London's credit, she understood that there are many different types of painting and that she needed to figure out which one exactly was being done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of rooting for London to five hole this arts and crafts task.
I keep waiting. It seems to me there are a lot more arts and crafts tasks this season than there usually are.
Certainly.
And
are.
By a lot more, I mean two.
Yeah. But it's all rock climbing and arts and crafts this season.
Yeah, they just want someone to five hole.
Yeah. So here comes Floyd. And again, in true Floyd fashion, he could not be more excited about doing this task. The thing that I've noticed about Floyd also is that, you know, he is really dedicated to narrating what he's doing when he gets to a task.
He is a treasure. Floyd is a national treasure. And can I just say, like, I'm willing to bet that Floyd and Becca, they're both huge fans of the show. They probably like roped some halfway willing partner into making a video with them to apply for the show. Or maybe they applied as solo, but I'm going to guess whoever they had as partners that they intended to bring with them on the race, I'm so glad those people didn't get to race, because then we get them with each other and whoever they had couldn't have been halfway as great as the two of them are together. Like, if I'm casting an all-star team, like, they're number one with a bullet. I want them to come back and race again, like, maybe every season.
You think in some alternate reality they both had, like, some super lame partner?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Mike was talking about this with you 2 weeks ago, about how with a lot of these teams, one of them is the more exciting person and the other one is kind of the dud. And it ends up really being about this one person's individual race journey and also the person that is with them. And one of the benefits of this Perfect Stranger season is we don't get a lot of that. Like, everybody is the alpha. There are very, very few duds. And so we get kind of these great Floyd and Becca teams, because it could have been like, you know, right. Floyd and his drum major friend Steve, and, you know, Steve would never talk and he'd do half the roadblocks and he'd be okay at them. And, you know, Becca would have, I don't know, she'd have like her brother or her mom or something, and that person would do some of the roadblocks, and sometimes they'd say something and be like, oh, that person's still there.
Yeah.
But we have Floyd and Becca together, and it's a wonderful thing. And if that is the only good thing that ever comes out of Amazing Race, Perfect Strangers, I am more than okay with it, and it will not have been in vain.
Yeah, I like this theory that most of these teams that CBS Reality finds, it's like there's one sort of breakout, and then there's like the other one. And now we have a season where they tried to cast mostly the breakouts, or who they thought were going to be the breakouts.
I think that's, you know, if that's not what they intended, that's what they should have intended.
Yeah. Okay. And we were treated to, you know, Floyd talking us through every single step of the way of what he was doing of, okay, I got to go over here. I got to get this mask. I'm going to bring it over here. Okay, I'm going to look at the paint. I'm going to get the paints out, and then I'm going to do the shading. Okay.
Well, don't you think production probably tells them to do that?
Because, well, nobody else does it.
Tara was doing it a little bit. And Liz was doing it a little
bit.
Liz
was like a verbal monologue about like that, you know, she doesn't have time to paint because she's too busy being a mom and being in the army.
Well, everybody had their kind of running commentary while they were doing this. And I think I would be very surprised if they were not told to do that, because otherwise, what are they doing? They're like, have you ever been at the arts and crafts tent at summer camp, Rob?
Mm-hmm.
It's a quiet ass place, and it's not very much fun if you yourself are not also doing arts and crafts.
Okay. All right. So we got then London finally shows up. And at this point, Matt Redman already finished the leg. They're at the mat already.
They're beasts. Like, I think they're strong contenders to win it all, or, you know, they're strong contenders to be that team that goes out before the finals, you know.
Right, right. You could see them fourth place. Or do you think we're going to have four teams in the finale? I don't want them to do that again.
I hate four teams in the finale.
Right. Because how many weeks from the finale are we? And then we're at six teams.
I think four teams in the finale tends to be really badly designed.
Yeah. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed against that. All right. So finally we get to Brooke. And she has to end up doing the roadblock. And actually, similarly to when she had to climb the mountain, it's like, you know, maybe outside of the ladle, like Brooke ends up, you know, you think she's going to really struggle with a task, but then she gets there and she does it. And then it ends up going pretty well.
Yeah. And this also, I think, is one reason that she's been reminding a lot of people of Haley, because she seems like if you just listen to what she's saying and how negative she seems to be in the moment, you would think she's not very good at what she does. But then when you actually have her performing a task, she's absolutely fine at it.
Yeah, I did think that as we saw a couple of the teams talking out there, I think it was Mike and Joey and Becca, and then Scott was there. There was a little bit of talk about Scott saying that he thinks that maybe things could go well if she could just keep her cool.
I just hope Brooke stays patient, because she freaks out in there.
Well, nice job.
Which I did think was a good line from Joey, I have to say.
Not bad. He does come through with the one-liners.
I thought that was pretty funny. Okay. But yes, certainly Brooke was able to keep her cool in there.
Yeah, she stayed cool, calm, and collective.
Yeah. So, all right. So, good job there by Brooke.
There's an interesting compare and contrast that I did want to do here at this point, because I thought it was very, very interesting that you have Brooke in the task asking Liz for help, and Liz grumbling about it and saying, like, you know, who asks for help? Like, I'm not going to help you. Put on your big girl panties, suck it up, do the task. And then earlier in this same episode, we had the incident where Lolo doesn't tell people where the clue is, and Liz and Michael get kind of bent out of shape about it. In fact, Michael's still outside ranting about this at this point.
Yeah.
About, like, how dare they not help them? Like, how are these two situations different?
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, I would say it's a little bit different just because Lolo, like, went out of their way, like, to ditch everybody. And I guess they had been working together, where then here comes Brooke and she is just, like, flat out, like, walking in and asking everybody to help her do the task. So I feel like it's a little bit different. I think that people might have already been through this a couple times with Brooke.
Yeah. And I think, again, when it comes to helping people on this show, I say really only ever help people if it's going to cost you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case, I think in both of these instances, there would have been a downside to helping another team. And so I don't fault Lolo at all for ducking out and, like, getting to their task and not stopping to help everybody else, because all that does, you know, they started it in the back of the pack. All that does is keep them in the back of the pack, and it gives other teams an opportunity to pass them. So I don't fault them there. I don't think it was that shady. And I don't really fault Liz for not helping Brooke either.
Yeah. Okay, well, the teams start knocking out these masks even further. Floyd's mask is done. We end up eventually seeing Tara get through. And it really comes down to London and Liz being the only two people that are left. And eventually, London gets through, much to the chagrin of Mike. He was very upset, Jess.
We just had a moment of silence to appreciate how upset Mike was.
Yeah, he was really upset too. We came in fourth, now we're sixth. Liz is really blowing it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit of a hothead.
Yeah, he gets upset. Jess, did you know from the edit, once we saw in the opening Mike talking about how much he misses his daughter, that they were doomed for a last place finish tonight?
Well, I thought it was going to be one of two things. Like, I thought it was really interesting, first of all, like, you know, who okayed that editing decision to, like, go back to the beginning of the previous leg? We already saw some of this kind of, and, like, just kind of drop that into the, at the beginning. It was pretty heavy handed. But I thought it was either going to be they got eliminated or they take first place and they're really, like, their hearts are back in it. And neither one of those things actually happened.
Well, what I think happened was that you had the moment that was on the mat where Liz starts mentioning about how that he was doing this for his daughter. And then I think that if you had that moment and then you didn't necessarily remember what his daughter's name was, that you had to have this in one episode. So I don't know where you necessarily would put that in.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, yeah. They need to. But isn't that Phil's job, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, remind everybody, yes, Pearl is your daughter.
Yes. All right. Well, then ultimately we ended up with London heading out. And Jess, we had the two teams really running together in Brooke and Scott and then also Lolo. They went running. Finally, Liz and Mike came out. And I wrote in my notes, classic Amazing Race fake out to the mat, where it's like Brooke and Scott were running with Lolo. It's like, wait, oh, wait, we made the wrong turn. Oh, wait, where are we going? We don't know anything. And then we get to the mat. And of course, it's them.
Well, there must have been a little bit of time lost because
it was close because they were all at the mat at the same time.
They were all at the mat at the same time, and it didn't seem like there were, you know, there was 10 seconds between, you know, London leaving the task and Liz leaving the task.
But 19 times out of 20, when you get that on The Amazing Race, where it's like, there's a last place team, and it's like, oh, all of a sudden, if we can just, you know, if somebody gets lost, we can get in there, and then you see the teams ahead of them like, oh, wait, where are we going? Where, oh, wait, do we know? Should we stop and ask for directions? And then, like, the next shot is always them getting to the mat.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah. You're not wrong about that.
Okay. So there we are, Jess. Non-elimination leg number 7. And I have to say, I feel like that the race has lost a little bit of steam. I was so pumped up, like, 2 weeks ago when everybody was fighting and there was so much conflict and all the teams hated each other. And now everybody's getting along. Like, I feel like that this is a little humdrum for me.
Well, we got yet another U-turn coming up, so you got that going for you.
Okay, so that's good. That could maybe get some teams fighting.
Yeah, well, it'll probably be at the very beginning of the leg again, and it'll probably, you know, it'll probably just make people yell at each other some more.
And that's fine with me, but this was a night where everybody, like, all the teams got along with their partner, and all the teams got along with each other. And to me, that does not make a great Amazing Race.
It really doesn't.
I don't watch this show to see people do arts and crafts. I'm watching this show because I want to see some conflict.
Well, nobody watches this show to see people do arts and crafts. But,
right.
You know, there's a... I thought setting-wise
looked nice.
It was okay.
Venice was
yeah,
nice.
Venice was beautiful.
Right, right. I'd be real salty if we were in, like, some godforsaken place.
Yeah, we're in the middle of, like, the Sahara Desert.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing around for miles. And, you know, the tasks are, like, dig in the sand or build something out of sand.
Right.
Then, yeah, maybe.
Okay. All right, Jess, you want to get into some questions from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast?
Yes, please.
Jess, Ashley B. wants to know, did you think that Brooke might actually jump in the water? Because I did.
You know, I always wait for someone to get to that point. I don't think Brooke was there yet. It would have been fun.
Yeah, that would be great if somebody just has like a psychotic break on The Amazing Race.
Yeah.
I think that would be perfect. Okay. Amber wants to know, since no one saw Lolo get the clue and they have no proof that they lied, do they have plausible deniability that they found the street sweeper first?
Well, it seems to me that everybody saw them kind of conspicuously ducking out.
Right.
So I would guess that...
They were acting shady, though.
There's a little more proof there than we were maybe explicitly shown.
Okay. Randy Newpel wants to know, can the next RahapCon be in Venice?
Co-signed.
Yes. Okay. Book it. We'll book it. That's for summer 2018, not for 2017. We're already, talks are in the works, Jess.
Well, you have your passport now, so you
yes,
can go anywhere.
Yes. Now I'm like Floyd. I finally got my passport. Nobody has to be mad at me. Okay. Nolan says, I've been to Venice and I was in awe watching the luggage transporters rip around the alleyways. Thoughts on the contrasting methods of working together versus Joey one-manning the whole thing and almost getting medevaced? No way. Joey was not going to get medevaced.
He was nowhere close. That man is a beast.
Yes. I think that Joey had the best strategy.
Joey always has the best strategy.
I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, did you see Matt Redman knocking suitcases all over the place? And there were two of them trying to work on that.
Well, actually, I did.
Yes. Yes. I
like Derek's comment right below Nolan's.
Okay. Derek asks, did the boys get the edit of death? We just want to finally get a first again, and then they got it, then boom, they'll lose?
See, that's what I think we might be leading up to with them. Like, they're right. Such a strong team. And they had their story that was, we're the strongest team here, but we haven't gotten first. Where else do they have to go now that they've gotten first?
It's like the Joe Anglim winning the first four challenges of the merge. Like, you know, it's not going to end well.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah. I think that they should be major targets for somebody with the U-turn. Tony Scott wants to know, doesn't it seem like the judges were harsh during the singing challenge?
Yeah. Well, here is where I think it made a little more sense if you watched some of the extended footage of this, because you could kind of hear where they were getting things wrong. But it did seem like maybe sometimes the judges might have been stalling a little bit to get people, you know, the boat has to get to a certain point and the racers have to be out there for a certain minimum amount of time, maybe. It did seem like they were nitpicking a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, they weren't really mean in terms of what they were saying, but they did give a lot of like stink eye.
They did. But, you know, they're butchering their culture.
Yes. Jess, would that be a romantic date for you to be serenaded by Amazing Race teams on a boat, on a gondola?
As long as it's Amazing Race teams, because one of the things that I think should be self-evident by now, anybody that's ever been somewhere touristy, is that those gondola rides cost $1 million and they take 5 minutes and they're really kind of a ripoff.
Yeah. Derek also says, this is not a question, but a statement. So let me tell you, you agree, Jess, true or false. Brooke has become one of his favorites. Her and Scott are amazing. Even though I'm team boys, Brooke and Scott are some of the best casting they've done in a while.
Yeah. And I think, again, this is one of those instances where whoever they would have brought with them on the race would not be as much fun as the two of them are together.
Yeah. Nope, they really did have some magical teams that they ended up pairing together. We talked about Team Fun, talked about Matt Redman, obviously Joey and Tara also
obviously.
As well. So, yeah, they've really done a good job here with these teams. PJ says, is Lolo's sudden visibility spike due to the lack of teams left, or are they doomed for elimination? Do you feel like the edgic is going the wrong way for Lolo?
They did get a little OTTN this week. But I think that might just be more down to the fact that, you know, everybody has to have a story at this point in the race. You can't just be some random team that everybody keeps forgetting is still there. Six teams left. Start pulling your story weight, Lolo.
Okay. Jess, any other thoughts about this leg of the Amazing Race?
I'll be excited when we go back to kicking people off next week, okay. I guess.
Where are we headed to next?
I think we're headed to Greece next, which is exciting. They have not been to Greece in a while.
Okay.
I think they're overdue.
And then we're going to have our third and final U-turn of the season?
Well, one hopes. Who knows? They might just start throwing U-turns on every leg at this point.
Right, but isn't that weird to have the final one at leg 8?
They've had it later. Like, they've had it at Final Four, I think, at one
right.
point.
But it just seems
and
weird to do three,
that.
And then they're all, like, bunched up between, what, episode, like, 3 to 8?
Well, they haven't had back-to-back U-turns, which I guess is good.
Okay. All right. So we still have one more non-elimination leg to go somewhere along the way, right? We're going to have three during the season. This is the third and final U-turn week coming up next week. So I guess we will see where we go from here.
I think it's worth kind of getting a little bit of our Josh Wiggler on here and talking about
always
the stories.
Fun.
Always fun. It's always nice to have a little bit of wiggle room.
Yes. So I hear.
We can talk a little bit about the stories that we're seeing here. Like, everybody kind of has an arc, and I'm curious to get your take on where you think, based on what we've seen of these racers, like how they're being portrayed, what that kind of spells out for them in terms of their trajectory in the race.
Okay. So you want to just go by order of finish? I'll start with Matt and Redmond. I mean, I guess that their story really just been one of dominance where, you know, we saw them get into it with Vank and Ashton and it looked like they were taking a little bit of a heel turn, but I feel like that we've really walked that back.
Yeah, I think we're starting to like them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, they were so likable this leg, and you kind of like, you can't even begrudge them for being that super alpha team that finishes first, just because they were having fun and they seemed to be getting along with everybody. Like, they really have done kind of a face turn, and I wonder, I think that either means we're being set up to want them to win, or we're going to miss them when they're gone.
Yeah. We'll see. I do think that that storyline of the fallen angel, I think that that could be potentially in the mix for them, either that or being set up for a really dominant winning pair. All right. So second team fun, Jess. I mean, they've been pretty much one note with the exception of when Floyd lost his passport.
Yeah. And they did kind of, they turned on a dime at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel like they have it in them to fail hard.
You think that there is potentially doom on the way for Team Fun?
I feel like the fun meter is going to drop at least once, and I don't know whether they bounce back from that or not.
I could see them being in the finale, and then they're like third place, and they never have like a bad moment. Like, they cross the finish line, everybody's cheering for them around that like second or third place, and I feel like you never end up seeing them, you know, downtrodden.
Yeah, they could just be like, they could be that third place team that just kind of drops out of the running
right.
in the first 10 minutes of the episode, and then they do all the tasks, and they're having a great time, and they're getting what they came for, but they kind of roll up. It's like the final shot is them rolling up to the mat and cheering and being happy.
Right, and I think that they might have a low moment in the finale, but I feel like overall it'll be a pretty straightforward ride for them. Okay, who was four this week? Brooke and Scott? Or no, Tara and Joey were three?
Yep, Tara and Joey were three.
I mean, what's that story, Jess?
Well, I think many of the other teams have mentioned that Tara and Joey are the team to beat.
They are the team to beat. Definitely think there's a strong chance that they could emerge as the winners. Very dominant team. I mean, it's a story of overcoming all odds.
Yeah, I mean,
Mom
it's
and Dad.
Sort of, yeah. You don't see it out of, like, you think people underestimated them at first. And, you know, we see Joey kind of having that stumbling block in the first episode.
I know I've underestimated them, but I have seen the error of my ways, Jess.
I think we've all underestimated them. And I see, like, Tara seeing something in him that the rest of us missed until very recently.
Yes. And we've been made aware of.
And, I mean, can we take a minute? Like, Tara's amazing. She speaks a million languages. She's lived in Italy. She's very comfortable with the travel. She's physically strong. She's very smart. I like her a lot. And I
her painting needs a little room for improvement.
Yeah, maybe there'll be a finger painting task next week and she can redeem herself.
Maybe that could be a Mother's Day gift where they like take her to like Color Me Mine so she could at least have that experience and have like some time to work on that.
That's always fun. I got a little – the people at my child's daycare took his footprints and like drew flowers around it, and that's what I got for Mother's Day.
Yes, yes.
So, something like that. But anyway, yeah, I could see I think there's a very strong winner story in Joey and Tara here.
Could definitely be the case. All right, so Brooke and Scott, I mean, certainly they have been on a journey together.
They have been on a journey. And they persevere despite each other's best efforts.
Right.
I think this is an underdog story if ever there was one.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to watch if we end up with some sort of a growth narrative for Brooke. Does she become, by the end of the race, that, like, I can do anything. I've doubted myself. Now, does she end up sort of changing her attitude around, or do they continue this yin and yang attitude, the optimist and the pessimist towards the end?
Well, I think someone's also got to fill that void that Vank and Ashton have left of, you know, we couldn't be more different, but we found common ground in our common goals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could see that being, like, they have a really, like, they've triumphed over the adversity of being on a team with each other.
Okay, Jess, what is the story of Lolo?
Is there a story of Lolo?
I don't know what it is other than Lolo does arts and crafts. Lolo gets clues and doesn't tell people when they get them. And that's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, they've been kind of at the back of the pack. But we haven't seen them, like, even... they don't even get that sound bite of, you know, we're in the back of the pack and we haven't won a leg yet, but we're going to win a leg. Like, you know, Joey and Kelsey got that repeated sound bite. And that was kind of how I tracked that they were going to be the winners of their season. And I feel like Lolo are about as interesting as Joey and Kelsey were at this point in their race, but they have even less of a story.
Hey, leave Joey and Kelsey out of this.
Hey, Joey and Kelsey are doing great. They're getting married.
Yes, congratulations. Mazel tov to Joey and Kelsey. All right. And Liz and Michael, of course, probably the team on the shakiest ground. Both intra and inter team.
Yeah, I mean, they're the strongest personalities. But, you know, that could also spell a victory. It would spell an unlikely victory, especially with these two non-elimination legs. And I think it doesn't feel like that's where we're headed with them.
Jess, has any team in the history of the Amazing Race ever pulled off the non-elimination leg hat trick? Has any one team ever gotten all three of the non-elimination legs?
Well, non-elimination legs have been handled differently in the earlier seasons.
Yeah.
So you did have some teams get hit with multiple, like there was a point, I think in season three, when Flo and Zach got hit with back-to-back non-elimination legs and ended up pulling it out in the end. So I think it's hard to kind of track that historically just because of the way that non-elimination legs are handled now, as opposed to how they were handled. But you've certainly had many teams face more than one and still go on to win.
Okay. I want them to get the third one. I want them to be the last team to arrive another time, but you're not eliminated.
And at that point, you'd have people crying that it was fixed.
Yeah. Yes. They cannot be killed. They are Team Immortal.
Team Immortal.
Yes.
Yeah, there can be only one.
There can only be one. Team Highlander. All right. Jess, great stuff. Do we have a hashtag for this week? Hashtag cow skull?
Hashtag cow skull might be the best we can do.
Okay. All right. There you go. Jess, do we know when the finale is for Amazing Race?
Yeah, we do know when the finale is.
When is it?
For the Amazing Race. It is...
Plan my finale party.
Yeah, I had this written down. It's going to be June 1st.
June 1st. Okay. All right. So that's less than a month to go. So we have, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 nights left of The Amazing Race 29. Maybe 4 nights left of The Amazing Race. And Jess, I am very sad to report that next week, due to my amazing travel schedule, we are going to be taking the podcast to Toronto, Ontario, Canada, coming up, where I will be doing the biggest live show we've ever done for Rob as a Podcast at the Sheridan Center. Stephen Fishback and I will be hosting our live Survivor Know-It-Alls on Wednesday, and then I will be talking Big Brother Canada back at the Sheridan Center on Thursday night, and then I'll be flying back on Friday. So I will not be with you, but I hear you have a great show in store.
Yes, I'll be speaking with the great Mike Bloom, whom you may know from many of the podcasts he does on the Rob Has a Podcast Network, and also from the
Survivor.com.
Yes, Parade.com. It was an amazing interview he did with the Eliminated Survivor. And, you know, he's also a Survivor historian, and over there they call him the Temp. And I've been told I'm not allowed to do the same to him when he fills in for you.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Jess. Of course, you could follow Jessica Leese on Twitter. She's at Haymaker Hattie. I'm at Rob Sestradino. Jess, anything else you want to say?
I've got nothing else. Have a great week, everybody.
All right. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.